funk have always been intertwined. We're hoping that the music inspires you to support this effort by visiting WPFWFM.org to make a tax-deductible secure donation to our relocation fund. That's Jazz is the Teacher, Funk is the Preacher, Saturday and Sunday, April 6th and 7th, from midnight to midnight. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. My name is Garland Nixon. I'm on Fridays from 6 to 7 p.m. Always got plenty to say. Of course, I wasn't here last week. I had an interesting, you know, a person's got to take a few minutes to do something and enjoy themselves every now and then. And I went down to St. Thomas and St. John's in the Virgin Islands and spent the week down there kind of unwinding, getting myself together, enjoying the atmosphere. It was really a lot of interesting stuff. Boy, I could do a whole show on that. I did. What? Now, here's what's something interesting. I saw Epstein Island. I saw it. I was at St. John and I had a tour and I'm going around and the tour guide says, "You know what that is right out there?" I said, "What?" "Epstein Island." I'm like, "No." He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "No." He's like, "Yeah, that's Epstein Island right there." I'm like, "Oh, I think I see Bill Clinton." No, all jokes aside, I think Epstein doesn't know it anymore. But, you know, there was all kind of miscreant activity and tomfoolery going on there at the ruling elite by members of the ruling elite. In a nutshell, and this can maybe lead me into where I'm going. In a nutshell, we were, as I always say, we were lied to about Epstein Island. What was Epstein Island? What are we told Epstein was? He was a pedophile, right? He was some kind of a pedophile. Ghislaine Maxwell was his assistant, and they did pedophile stuff, which may be true. Certainly, I believe that. But there's another part to that that you really have to think about, that I'm going to connect to where I'm going. You know, isn't it interesting that this man owned an island in the Virgin Islands? I was there. Man, you have any idea what it would cost to buy a home in St. John, much less the entire island? I would imagine you're looking at probably, I don't know, $1 billion for that island, $500 million, a bit. That's what you're thinking of for that island, right? That was his island. But he had another compound in New Mexico that was worth an unmentionable thing. And he had a house and all this money he had. And he was supposedly some kind of a money changer of some type. But there was never really any legitimate trail of money. So he spent money like Bill Gates or somebody, but he didn't have any legitimate income. And might I add, let's put a couple pieces of information together. When Alex Acosta, who was in the Trump administration, when he was asked why Epstein got caught in Florida doing the same thing, trafficking young girls, prostitution, and Florida pretty much slapped him on the hand. He got a year suspended sentence, weekends in jail. He didn't have to spend the time in jail. When Alex Acosta was asked, "Why in the world did you sign off on such a gravy sentence for this guy who did terrible things?" And Acosta said, "I was told he's intelligence. Leave him alone." That's on record. That is on record. His girlfriend, Ghislaine Maxwell, her father's name, you might have heard me say this before, her father's name was Robert Maxwell. There's a book about him. You can look it up. It's called Robert Maxwell, Israeli Super Spy. Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a spy for Israel. Okay? Her sister involved in the same type of activity. In fact, her sister had one of these Silicon Valley tech companies that was funded by Bill Gates. Weird. So Alex Acosta said, and he was in the Trump administration, said, "I was told leave Epstein alone. He's intelligence." his girlfriend, cohort, or whatever, Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a Mossad agent. One could suspect that Epstein was Mossad. And if Alex Acosta, a U.S. government official, was told, leave him alone, he's intelligence, that means he was also CIA. What does that mean? I don't have to put that together for you, do I? That the government of the United States, along with the government of Israel, was involved in the trafficking of young girls for sexual activity. Your government was involved in that. Now, one may say, well, is there any other, I don't know, anything else, Garland? Well, what happened to Epstein when it was possible that he might talk? They put him in one of the most high-tech prisons that we have because he's a very important prisoner. Because who knows, you know, this guy could be connected to intelligence or anything. And mysteriously, the guards fell asleep. And wouldn't you know what a coincidence, at exactly the same time the guards fell asleep, the cameras went out. And as a third coincidence, at exactly the same time the guards fell asleep and the cameras went out, that's when he decided to kill himself. Isn't that just weird? So now he can't talk. Why do I say all that? Because the result of that is obvious, isn't it? It's really, really obvious. It's really obvious. But it comes down to a foundational belief of mine that gets me where I'm going somewhere with this. It gets me where I'm going. Okay? Goes back to COVID. It goes back to foreign policy. I could go on and on and on and on. I don't trust people who traffic young girls for sex. Do you? Do you? Do you trust someone? If you found out tomorrow that I was trafficking young girls or boys or grown girls or boys for sex, wouldn't you say, you know, I don't trust that brother right there. He's up to no good. He's untrustworthy. Wouldn't you say that? And if tomorrow I said, hey, do this, it's in your best interest, wouldn't you say, I don't think Garland's looking out for my best interest. I mean, for God's sake, the man's trafficking young girls or boys or old girls or boys. He's a sex trafficker. He's a criminal. He's not to be trusted. Wouldn't you say that Garland is not to be trusted if you found out I was involved in such activity? Yes, you would. And you would be correct. You would be using your noodle. You would be using your deductive reasoning to say, I shouldn't trust this fool because he's up to no good. Yet, when our government says something about foreign policy, that guy over there in country X, he's the bad guy. Oh, that country's over there, they're the bad guys. We're the good guys. We're doing this to bring democracy to this country. We're doing that to protect the democracy of that country. We're doing that. When these lying, thieving, child sex trafficking monsters do something, people fuss at me when I tell you don't trust them, they're liars. People look at me, oh, well, I don't know, Garland. I think you may be giving us propaganda. The government said this. And I'm like, that's pretty much particularly why you shouldn't believe them. See, when COVID happened, right, there was a foundation there for Garland. And I ran into a lot of headaches with a lot of folks because people were scared. And when the government said, stand 6 feet apart, wear your mask, do this, do that, run over here, don't do this, go in here, don't go out there. They gave us a whole litany of policies. And a lot of people said, hey, Garland, you know, we got to do those things. And I said, it's possible we do. And you know, Garland, they'll help. I said, it's possible they may. And then they said, and the government's doing that. They're looking out for our health and our best interests. I said, nah, we just ran into a brick wall. I don't trust these people. I don't ever believe that they are looking out for our best interests. So whatever they said, if it was stand 6 feet apart, take this, do this, say this, whatever they said, I had a fundamental distrust for them. And I haven't lost it. And I don't care how scared I get. I ain't going to get scared enough that I trust people who are liars, warmongers, and child trafficking criminals. And I've always had that problem with people. Because people will say, first of all, what is epistemology? Epistemology is what? In philosophy. It's how do we know what we know? My name's Garland. How do you know my name's Garland? Right? How do you know? I've told you it's Garland. Could it be something else? How do you know what you know? How do you know that's your father? I know it's my father. Well, there's people who have thought that was their father and found out later, shenanigans going down. Bad news, that ain't really your father, right? No matter what it is, the question at some point in life, everything that you believe that you know, I study Zen, and one of the things in Zen is, right, unlearning. Learn, you know what I mean? Letting go of things that you, all these things that you've been taught and you've believed so you can try to figure things out for yourself, right? So it gets you to that. How do I know what I know? Once I know you're untrustworthy, at that point I know that I have to be skeptical of everything you say. Now, that's not to say because you're untrustworthy or a liar, a cheat, and a scoundrel, a knave, dare I say, that everything you say is untrue. Because you could be a liar. You could tell everything, every word out of your mouth for your entire life could be untrue. And then the next thing you say could be true. So I have to evaluate everything that is said based on the merits of that particular thing. So when COVID came, when they said, hey, stand on your, 6 feet apart, do this, do that, whatever, right? Rather than say, I don't trust it or I do trust it, I'd say, well, let me try to see what I can find. Let me look into it. I don't trust the people that are telling me this. That doesn't mean that it's wrong. That doesn't mean that it's right. For me to assume that everything they told me was wrong would be no different than me assuming that everything they told me was right. It's just two opposite sides of the same coin. It's called absolutism. Everything I say, this person says is right. Everything they say is wrong. Everything they do is evil. Everything they do is good. That's absolutism. I don't believe in that. You have to evaluate every instance on the merit of itself. And this is not a COVID show. I'm just using that as an example. That when it came to COVID, there were those of us who said, we don't trust the government. So when the government says do X, we never believe that they're looking out for our best interest, so we don't trust them. That doesn't change when it comes to foreign policy. And you listen to this show, you know that. I listen to people, country so-and-so did this. And my question is, how you know that? Did you study that? Did you look into it for yourself? You remember when people said, I want to do my own research, and they literally said, you do your own research, you'll die from doing it. Don't, whatever you do, don't do your own research. I don't trust people to tell me don't do my own research. I can read. I can make a decision. Let me say this. Did you know by law that if you, a doctor says, I think you should do this, right? You have a right to go to a doctor for a second opinion. And you can listen to two doctors, and one doctor says you can do X, and the other doctor says you do Y. And you can say, I think I'm going to go with this doctor. You're not a doctor. You did your own research and you decided I'm going with that. You found two doctors that said do two different things. And you chose the one ultimately that you felt you should go with. And that's how it works in medicine. So all I'm saying is this, do not discount your own ability and your own right to make decisions for yourself. Don't just let people tell you everything. And you assume that somebody else is looking out for your best interest. Let me give you an example. I remember when my daughter was in third grade. My daughter was a smart kid. And one day they called me and said, all right, what's going on? Well, your daughter's this and that, and I think we should put her in special education. I said, what are you talking about? Yeah, she's a little slow in this and that. I said, nope. No, well, nope. Where is your evidence? Show me what you got. Well, we've done this and this. They really didn't have nothing. And I don't know how much you know about the school system in America, but it's nothing unusual for young black children to get stuck in special education and then held behind. They then teach them slower, and then they say, well, they're not up to par with the other kids, so we got to keep them in special ed, because they put them in special ed and they kept them there slower. And a lot of parents didn't question it. They just thought, well, they're telling me the truth about my kid. They ought to know. They're the school. That ain't me. And you know what? My daughter graduated straight A's from college, University of Baltimore. But she wouldn't have
if I didn't go with what I believed, if I just went by this system, they'd have stuck her in special ed. She'd have been behind, and she, by the time she got to college, they'd be saying, well, perhaps she could learn a trade, something she should do with her hands. Maybe she can be a maid. But I didn't trust the system, so I said, nah, we ain't going that route. Not to say that there's anything wrong or right. I'm not putting a judgment on special ed. This isn't even about special ed. Although if you research it, you will find that there are many, many times when young children of color are put into special education or put into special behavioral classes. Well, that child has some behavioral issues. They're a kid. They're screaming. They're talking in class. I ran my mouth. I don't know if you notice I like to talk. I was always in trouble for talking in class. Did that mean I should be in special ed or in some kind of a school for kids that don't act right? No. If they could have got away with it, they'd have thrown me in one. Now, although my mother wouldn't have let him either. So that wouldn't have happened. What am I getting back to? There are people who trust the powers that be, who trust the government, who trust those who are in charge. I don't. I trust myself. Why? Because ultimately I'm responsible for the decisions that I make. I'm the one that's going to have to suffer. I'm the one that's going to have to deal with it. Right? And if I'm wrong, ain't nothing wrong with being wrong. Right? There's a great book. What was that big book? Ishmael. Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. And it's a very, very interesting book. And in it, it was a gorilla, and the gorilla was like a brilliant philosopher who talked to this guy and taught him all about animals and all that and, you know, how an animal thinks. But one of the things the guy said, he said, well, I'm going to do this. And the guy said, yeah, but you might die. And the gorilla said, is it a disgrace to die? There ain't no might about it. I'm going to die sooner or later. I'd rather die making my own decisions and living the way I want than just die, have somebody else tell me to do it, and I walk right off a cliff and die. At least while I'm in the air about to die, I can say, well, I made a bad decision, not you made a decision and I went off a cliff. So even if I perish, I'd rather perish making my own decisions than perish making somebody else's decision. So ultimately, my point being this, go to foreign policy right now. Let me ask you a question. Do you know what's going on in Gaza? Right now in Gaza, what's happening is the Israeli government is being financed and armed by the U.S. government. And they are slaughtering men, women, and children mercilessly. Slaughtering them by the tens of thousands, mowing them up, killing them, slaughtering them, murdering them. It is one of the most ruthless genocides you will ever see. And the government of the United States is down with it. The American people say to our government, hey, cut it out. You know what the government says? I don't know. This is what the government, if they were honest, they would say to the American people. I don't know if y'all have figured this out, but we don't represent you. We don't listen to you, and we don't care what you have to say. Now, here's what people say. Joe Biden's going to lose. Do you think the ruling elite really cares who the president is? You think they really care? They're going to get what they want. They own Congress. They own all of it. Do you think they're really sitting there worried? Oh, no, the Republicans are going to win. See, that game is for you. That game is for you. You know, so here's what happens. Let me give you an example. 2003 comes along, and George W. Bush signs the largest tax cut in the history of this country for the rich. Like 85% of it go all to the, as always, it goes to the rich, right? So all of this money goes to the rich, these gigantic tax cuts. And all the Democrats go, oh, that's terrible. You see what the Republicans will do? Now, that tax cut law was good for 10 years. That meant in 2013, those tax cuts would expire and the tax cuts for the rich would be gone. 2013, Barack Obama was the president. All Barack Obama had to do was nothing. These tax cuts would sunset at 2013. It's over. They're gone. They're done. Tax cuts all going to the rich, billions, trillions of dollars for the rich. But you know what people say? Yeah, the Republicans do those tax cuts for the rich. And all Obama had to do was nothing because they were going away. Barack Obama didn't do nothing. You know what he did? He signed them into law permanency. So the Republicans pass the tax cuts for the rich and the Democrats signed them into permanent law. And what you get to do is fight. What you get to do is argue over the Republicans. See, that's why I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. Because I'm not into team sports like that. You know what? I am into team sports, but I recognize it as team sports. I got a Commanders hat. I'm a fan of the Commanders. I got a Wizards sweatshirt, like the Wizards. Got a Caps hat, like the Caps. That's great. When Jordan was with the Bulls, I had all this Bulls stuff. Still like the Bulls stuff, you know? I when it's team sports, it's great. I enjoy team sports. But I'm not going to pretend that politics are team sports. What, you know what I know? You know the way I see it? I'm sitting at a restaurant. There's a restaurant, there's a waitress in blue and a waitress in red. I can order what I want to. It's all cooked in the same kitchen. It's all cooked in. They give me different menus. You want a blue menu or a red menu? Maybe some appetizers are different. But when it comes down to it, the meals are prepared in the same kitchen by the same cooks. The laws that are passed. You see, those tax cuts for the rich were prepared not by George W. Bush, but by a bunch of rich people. They wrote them and said, here, and he passed them. And when it came to Barack Obama, all of us suckers thought Obama will never pass those. That's the Republicans, blah, blah, blah. Those same people that wrote them and got George W. Bush to pass them, they then said to Barack Obama, hey, man, oh, we getting paid, man. We're trying to eat, bro. Do me a favor. Pass those. What do you think Obama said? No. He'll say no to you, but they never say Obama, Bush, Trump, whoever it is, they ain't saying no to them. They say no to you. And you get to fight. They give you something to argue about. You know, something inane, something, some frippery that doesn't mean anything to them. First of all, you think those rich people care about abortions? When they get their side chick pregnant, if abortion is not legal in that state, they send her to another state. If abortion is not legal in that country, they send her to another country. What do they care if abortion is legal or not? That's something to use to get the working class to fight amongst each other. It don't matter to them. Those laws don't apply to them. You think somebody's going to go to, I just came from St. John. All them rich people with all of their mansions on the mountains. You think some of them jokers ain't got piles of rock, piles of cocaine laying all over that mountain. It ain't but a little police department with three or four people, and they own it. I mean, it's a little town and an island exclusively owned, you know, nothing but rich folks there. So they got all the coke in the world. You think anybody's going to come knock on their door? Pardon me there, Mr. Rich Guy, billionaire. Yes, I understand there's cocaine on you. No, they don't even see it. Don't exist. Now, some young black man got $5 worth of crack on him. He's going to the hoosegow. Because what we have is the illusion of laws and the illusion of rules so that we'll think there's some kind of an order. Those laws and rules don't apply to them. They don't apply, blah, 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 no, no. They're for you so they can keep you in line. They can lock you up if they need to. And they can give you the facade that there's some kind of an order and you'll believe it. And you'll say things like, no one's above the law. Oh, if you're a sucker, if you believe that. Obama came in. What did he say? What did Obama say? Nobody's above the law. What did Obama say? I mean, they came to him and they said, look, we got George W. Bush. We got Cheney. We got Karl Rove. We got crime after crime. Man, we got him now. We got him. Let's go prosecute him. What did Obama say? We're trying to move forward, not looking back. I mean, let me ask you this. You ever heard that happen on the street? You ever heard that happen? I don't know anybody who's ever committed a crime in the future. Every crime that was ever committed, once you committed it, it was the past. Right? You ever heard them say, yeah, that brother did this. He sold somebody a bag of weed illegally. You ever go to court and see the judge say, hey, there's Garland. He sold a pound of weed. What do you have to say to yourself, Mr. Nixon? Your Honor, that was 3 months ago. Okay, we move on. That was the past. Oh, yeah, we can move on. You're going to jail. But when it comes to the billionaires, Obama comes in. What about George Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, blah, blah, blah? That was the past, man. Now, maybe if they'd have committed those crimes in the future, I'd have to put them in jail. If they had invented a time machine and committed the crimes in the future, then you know what he'd have said? We can't. Why? They haven't committed them yet. Well, they committed them just last month. Oh, well, they committed them in the past. So we can't very well go after these rich people for future crimes. We can't go after them for past crimes. And if they do them in the present, by the time we talk about it, it's now the future. So here's what you got. You can't go after rich folks for crimes. There are no laws for them. The lines of laws are for you, you poor sucker, if you believe it. Now, all of that being said, that's why I don't trust the government. That's why I don't trust them. When they tell me that country X is evil, when they tell me that leader X of the country is evil, when they tell me that whoever is evil, I think to myself, I know you're evil. I don't know about the leader of country X. Don't know about, maybe I'll study him, maybe I won't. They told me Gaddafi was evil. In hindsight, you know what I found out? Gaddafi wasn't evil. His people loved him. They told me Fidel Castro was evil. What did I find out about Fidel Castro? He fought for independence from his country that was being basically run by the CIA and the mafia. And they were doing all kinds of child trafficking, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, you name it. All that was going on in Havana. And Fidel Castro and the liberators of Cuba fought the U.S. empire through the imperialists, the mafia, all of that out of Cuba. And the United States said he's an evil guy. So the evil guy is the guy that throws the mafia and the CIA out of Cuba. Not the mafia and the CIA that's in Cuba. They're not the bad guys. It's the guy who threw the mafia and the CIA out of Cuba that was all doing all kinds of drug and sex trafficking in his country and abusing his people. Yeah, I could go on and on and on. Country after country. I never believed these people. They're liars. And now, here is my evidence. They're committing a genocide right in front of our face. Here's what I'm going to do. I'll give you the phone number. The number is 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. 93. Call in, whatever you want to talk about. And what I want to say. Oh, when you call in, number one, hold your mouth close to the microphone so I can hear you. Number two, don't use a speakerphone because they don't work well for radios. And number three, hold the phone to your ear while you wait for me to call on you. Don't set the phone down and listen to the computer or listen to the radio because we have a 10-second delay. And when I say, next caller, you're on, you won't hear me for 10 seconds. And I'll be going, caller, are you there? Caller, are you here? And you won't hear me because there's a delay. But if you have it to your ear, you will. So 202-588-0893 is the number. Do we have any call? Anybody yet? No callers yet? Isn't that wonderful? We have open lines. So we got open lines. Oh, I see the phone ringing already. So bottom line, I mean, I could go on and on. Haiti. Oh, these Haitian people, they just can't govern themselves. Really? They don't tell you that the United States keeps overthrowing their government, stealing their stuff, mistreating their people, abuse. They don't tell you that. They just say it's something wrong with the people of Haiti. So, oh boy, the phone's ringing. Here's what we're going to do. 202-588-0893. Let's go. First caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Yes, Mike from the district.
Mike! Man, look, I was gone last week. I miss hearing your voice. Most weeks you call me and lay me out, but I probably got it coming. Go for it, brother.
Yeah, I got a question to ask you. I got to even give a public shout out to C-SPAN because they're doing a good public service by having third-party candidates come on their show and spotlighting it like they never has done before. And, you know, and people keep calling in and they've been criticized to the third party candidates, but yet they don't understand that people are sick and tired of these two corporate parties. They tired of the two party system. They want something else right now because the Democrats and Republicans are nothing but high priced prostitutes. They're going to do whatever the donor class tell them to do. They don't care about you.
You know what, Mike? When people say we need a third party, I say I'd be happy with a second. Right now, look, third party, we need a second party. We got one party, a party of lies, a party of war, a party of oppression. We don't have two parties. You know what I think? They're trying to fool us into believing that we have two parties. What happens when they need more money for the war machine? Do we have two parties then? You know, what happens when the rich people need another? Do we have two parties? We got one party. And when they need to fool and bamboozle and befuddle us, they come up with something to pretend that it's a knife fight when it ain't nothing but a pillow fight amongst friends.
Yeah, I got a question to ask you.
Yes, sir.
Third party candidates are starting to get popular. How come you don't have them come on your show? You got the platform.
I don't even know. I don't even know anybody. Who would I have on?
You know Jill Stein.
Who? Yeah, you're right. I know Jill Stein. I'm glad you know her. I never thought about that. I know her well.
You know her. And Robert Kennedy Jr., have him come on your show.
I've talked to him. I do have his contact information.
You got the platform right now. And I wish you were using more to have those third-party presidential candidates come on. Because I always liked that before C-SPAN, it was the RT Network.
Right.
They did one of the most revolutionary things that I ever seen anybody do. They had a third-party candidate, third-party debate.
Yes.
It was the best debate that I ever seen. They weren't attacking each other personally. Yep. They were only attacking each other on their policy. That's the way how a debate should be done. And to me, that it is getting more and more popular right now that people want to see other candidates. So you have the platform. You need to bring them on. And then when you talk about Barack Obama, you do know that people get mad when you talk about the false prophet, when you talk about Black Jesus, right? You know, people get mad at that.
You know, the sad thing about it, Mike, and that is I understand now exactly what Barack Obama was. You know, he was brought on there so that Black folks would look and say, oh, we have somebody that looks like us and sounds like us and seems like us. But he was not representing. You know what I mean? He wasn't representing us. And all you got out of that, it's like peeing yourself in a dark suit. Nobody really notices, but you get a warm feeling.
Yeah, but you know what? When you talk about the abortion thing, and it seems like the only time the Democratic Party is interested in women's rights is when it comes towards abortion. But when it comes towards protecting their personal spaces, they AWOL. It's like they don't really care about that, especially when they have the right to complain about when men who identify as women coming into bathrooms or taking showers with them. Now, the one thing that no news journalist ever asked Barack Obama, because it started with the Obama and Biden administration. No news journalist ever asked Barack Obama, since you say that you're okay with that, would you ever allow your wife or those two little girls at the time when it was girls to go in bathrooms and take showers with men who identify as women? I believe Biden would do it.
Well, I'll say
Obama,
this.
I can't see Obama allowing his daughters to go in the bathroom and take showers with boys.
I'm going
to
be square with you, Mike. I'll be square with you on this. I got to be honest with you. That ain't at the it's not at the top of my list. You know what I mean? I mean, to me, right now, I got to be square. I think that's one of those things that's just used as a conversation. The government don't care about that kind of stuff. I'm more concerned with economic stuff.
But
I'm more concerned,
but
to
it,
me,
and
let me say one other thing. I'm going to say one other thing about abortion. The only time they care about abortion is 2 months before the election. 2 months before the election, yes, we're going to codify Roe versus Wade. We're here for women's rights. We're here for this person. We're here for everybody's rights 2 months before the election. As soon as the election's there, over, what are you going to do? We've got to pass more money for the military-industrial complex. We got to buy more planes and nuclear weapons. They don't care about any of that stuff. It's a football for us to kick around and vote.
Define oath of office. When they take an oath of office, they take an oath of office to serve and protect. Technically,
who?
They invalidate.
Serve who?
Every person in Congress, before they get elected, the president or anybody who is in public office, they take an oath of office to serve and protect. When you do not, when you don't serve and protect,
they serve and protect.
Okay, let me get started.
All right, go ahead, because I got a couple more callers I'm going to ask you.
The rights of little girls to not be intimidated, they in violation of their oath of office because they took an oath of office to serve and protect. They are violating the rights
I'll say this. They serve and protect the ruling elite. You're right. they are there to serve and protect.
I would
recommend people read a book by Lenin called The State and Revolution. You understand what the state, the government is there for. They are there because there's a tension between the ruling elite and the working class, because the working class want one thing and the ruling elite want something that isn't in our interest. And the government is there to mitigate the tension between the ruling elite and the working class. But they're there to do it on behalf of the ruling elite. They don't work for us. They work for the ruling elite.
You're never going to convince people of that because they've been brainwashed by the—
Well, look, we got to run. I certainly appreciate it, Mike, and it's a great conversation. Right. But I got a couple of callers, so I always like to give you time. You got a lot to say. Sometimes I agree with you. Some things I don't.
Well,
but I appreciate you calling. All right, we got to run, man. We got to run, brother. All right, next call. You're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Ronald, Baltimore.
Talk to me.
Two things. Number one, keep drilling it in our heads until we finally get it. And number two, I'm going to get off the phone so I can listen. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I certainly appreciate the call.
My pleasure. Thank you, sir.
All right. You know, I think that sometimes there's things that people can do. I forgot who it was that said, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them. Here's what I have to say. You know, how was the country founded? Genociding the Native Americans, enslaving the black people in the worst genocide, in the worst, most horrible, fascistic, brutal, vicious way that you could ever think of. And what are we told by the ruling elite, by the politicians, etc.? That was the past. Sure, we did those things and we're sorry about them, although they never did anything to repair them. So explain to me, if they feel so bad about it, why I can go to a Native American right now, I can go to a Native American reservation and the people don't have water and the people don't have a decent home to live in and the peace, you know what I'm saying? So explain that. They never did anything to fix it. They didn't care and they didn't change. There's other— the ruling elite of this country are brutal, murderous, genocidal fascists, and they haven't changed. And I submit my evidence in Gaza right now. They are doing the same thing in Gaza. That's what they did to black folks. That's what they did to Native Americans. And this is called a pattern. They never stop, because that is who the ruling elite is. And their job is to keep us fighting amongst each other. The white, the black, the gay, the straight, fighting amongst bathroom bills, fighting about all this stuff so we won't see who they are. But some of us are waking up. I'm glad to see that. Some of us are waking up. 202-588-0893. We got some open lines. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hi, Garland, this is Marie in Washington, D.C.
Marie! Oh, Marie, my dear friend Marie. How are you?
I'm great. Loving your show, as always. And I was wondering if you could comment on what the, Jared Kushner and Trump and...
What's that?
...going to be doing on the beachfront property in Gaza
and the
oil fields off the...
Here's what's interesting. I think I'm glad you asked me that. What's going on? Look, this is beautiful beachfront land on the Mediterranean where the Palestinians lived, valuable land. And did I mention there happens to be a lot of gas underneath the Gaza? Did I mention that? So what are they going to do? What did they do to the Native Americans when they wanted their land? They killed them all. And took their land. And there, nothing's changed. This is about the theft of land. Jared Kushner, you know, they got a bunch of synagogues. I've seen flyers. I personally have seen flyers for synagogues in New Jersey where they're having these real estate things where they're selling land of Palestinian land that they don't own. That's against the law. But they're doing it. And the United States isn't going to do anything because it is against the law, depending upon who you are. The laws are applied depending on who you are. And Jared Kushner, when he comes in, he's going to do what he does. He's going to do what, whether it's Hunter Biden, whether it's Jared Kushner, the president's son, the president's daughter, the president's son-in-law, who it is, whoever it is, they're going to use the position that they have in Washington, D.C. to fill their filthy pockets over the dead bodies of the Palestinians. That's what they'll do. You think Hunter Biden wouldn't do it if he got the chance? He'd smoke crack over their bodies. And guess what? Jared Kushner, if he gets in, that's the game plan. It doesn't matter which party's in. That's the game plan. Oh, by the way, there's a whole lot of gas under there, and the Palestinians ain't going to get none of it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's just beyond belief, horrifying. And I also heard, and it might have even been on your show, but I keep forgetting the details, that there was somebody in the State Department that just happened to have connections to the oil field.
Amos
and
Hochstein.
Also, and Ukraine.
Amos Sorry, Hochstein. Who was it? His name is Amos Hochstein, Hochstein. Anybody can look it up. He worked for Barack Obama during the Obama administration in the State Department. After the United States government overthrew the government of Ukraine, he, along with Hunter Biden, went to Ukraine. Amos Hochstein then became a very highly paid member of the board for Naftogaz, NAFTOGAZ. I've studied all this. It is the state gas company of Ukraine. So the United States overthrows the government of Ukraine. Amos Hochstein quits his job in the State Department, goes to Ukraine, and makes a fortune selling gas, working on a gas company in Ukraine. And then Joe Biden gets elected. Joe Biden then hires Amos Hochstein, and he says, Amos Hochstein, I want you to do something to end the Nord Stream pipeline, which then mysteriously gets blown up. All of this, nobody has to ask me if this is true. Anyone, go research Amos Hochstein and start searching, and all this will pop up. Now, where does Amos Hochstein, a man who was involved in the Nord Stream bombing of the Nord Stream pipeline, a man who went to Ukraine and got on the Naftogaz board of directors for the state gas company of Ukraine, and where is Amos Hochstein now? He's in Israel. Joe Biden has assigned him as some kind of a mediator in Israel, where there just happens to be a whole lot of gas under Gaza that somebody needs to steal. And I think Amos Hochstein is just the man for the job, Marie.
I think you're right. Who else could be better than that guy, Hochstein?
Yep.
Yeah, I think more people need to know about this, because people are still have blinders on, you know, it's Hamas, is just such a terrible thing, and oh, poor Israel. But it's just such crap. It's like, anyway.
They want to talk about October 7th, but you know what they won't talk about? Mm-hmm. October 6th and 70 years before that. You know, they won't talk about what was going on October 6th. Did they just wake up one day on October 7th and say, hey, let's go attack somebody for no reason, just blindly? No. No, this is a dynamic that was created, a dynamic of murder and revenge and attacks, and that's the way it goes. You know, that's like saying there was the battle of whatever in a war. Oh, my God, what a terrible battle. Well, there was a battle before that one and a battle before that one. There were battle after battle after battle. Well, these people attacked town X, and then the army of so-and-so attacked town Y. They didn't have an army, but there were things going on before that precipitated this. And that's the way. This isn't about good, bad, right, or wrong. This is about a reality that you can't look at things without a historical context and expect to understand them.
Right, but apparently this goes back to the 1800s, and when the original Zionists were planning to get rid of the Palestinians back then, they're just like, "We'll spirit them away."
Yeah, exactly. And they went the way of the Native Americans. All right. Thanks a lot, Marie. Appreciate the call. Next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Garland. How you doing, man? This is Marvin from Fort Washington. How you doing, man?
Wonderful. What's happening, Marvin?
Hey, man. You know, all this money that the U.S. is spending on the military-industrial complex, all these trillions of dollars, that's why we get $34 trillion in debt, because past administrations, all these conflicts and wars and putting sanctions on mostly people of color all around the world to control the world's resources. you know, mass let's talk about the prison industrial complex and police brutality. Last year was the deadliest year of police violence in the United States. You can Google it. Over 1,200 police killings last year. And, you know, as this economy gets really bad because the lack of resources for people, they're building more and more prisons. They're constantly building more and more prisons. And, you know, ICE detention centers, they have over, 101 ICE detention centers here in the United States. And it's constant. And they're building Cop City to fund more police jurisdictions. Because they know what's coming. They know that inequality is the highest it's ever been in this country. And they know what's coming. There's going to be more rebellions, more uprisings. People are going to get tired of the lies and the same old, and people are going to rise up, man.
I think you're right. I think people are going to get sick of, oh, you've got to be scared. Why? Because of Assad in Syria. He's going to get you. Saddam's going to get you. Gaddafi's going to get you. Putin's going to get you. Maduro's going to get you. It's always somebody 5,000 miles away that's going to get me. But why is it that my enemies are on Capitol Hill? My enemies are on Wall Street. My enemies are on Silicon Valley. My enemies are in the prison industrial complex. That's why they kind of got to kind of bamboozle me and point to somebody 5,000 miles away that don't have nothing to do with me and try to convince me that I have to be scared of Assad, Putin, Maduro, Fidel Castro, you name it.
Well, one more point, Garland. And these new crime bills in D.C. and Maryland, they are targeting people of color.
Okay.
I mean, poor people. I mean, people from poverty-driven backgrounds, you know, and they give more police jurisdictions, more powers, you know, to do whatever they want, you know.
Yeah, it's...
I mean, have a good weekend, Garland.
Yep. That's the game plan.
It's a conference this weekend, Garland. I forgot to tell you. It started today. The National Conference of Returning Citizens. The fourth annual conference that started today at the Arlington Renaissance Capitol View Hotel, and it's going on all weekend.
Oh, wonderful! Thank you.
All weekend.
Thank you very much.
And they're supposed to be having a march on Sunday from the African American Civil War Museum too.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much. You know, one of the things that I bring to people's attention is it's the Uhuru movement, the African People's Socialist Party right now that the FBI is going after and charging with all of these crimes. Right. What did the Uhuru movement do? What did they do? They work in the poorest black communities in this country. One of the things that the African People's Socialist Party does is they have this program for people who are returning from prisons, and they teach them culinary skills, cooking skills, so they can go out and they can get a job and sustain themselves and stay out of prison, right? Meanwhile, the FBI is going after them, charging them with all kind of crimes, shutting down their bank accounts. Now, the Biden administration is going after the African People's Socialist Party, a party that helps poor blacks. Now, this part, they've been around since, I don't know how, Omali Yashatele, who runs the party, who's the chair of the party, been doing what he does since 1966. He was in SNCC. And now what they're saying, just like they said about Paul Robeson, just like they said about Martin Luther King, he's working for the Russians just because he doesn't agree with U.S. foreign policy. They're going after him. Now, the African People's Socialist Party has a program to help returning people from prison get a job and stay out of prison. Joe Biden passed a crime bill to put them in prison. They have to try to mitigate the very policies that Joe Biden used to hold down people and keep them in prison, yet the FBI is going after them as the criminal. 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Dave Kensington.
Talk to me, Dave.
Hey, missed a couple callers, but probably shouldn't be a point. Wanted to make a analogy, I guess. That's kind of like a similar metaphor, if I'm correct.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, the carbon capture and storage, I guess it's only really applicable and really good for oil and steel production, I think, versus renewables. So, like you're saying, economically, that would be a priority, the renewables, yet carbon capture is heavily invested in, even though it's only really good for steel production. So that I would make analogous to ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act, where a child should be put in a home with their tribal affiliation before into another family. So that's, it's all about priorities is my only analogy there, since you were talking about Native American stuff too. And the other comment was just the Another Vision for Haiti. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, amazing. Thank you so much, because a lot of the reporting that I relied on was from Vice, and not such a great job there.
Let me ask you this, too. And, you know, as a person who considers myself very much an environmentalist, but logically speaking, right, here's what we're told. We've got to reduce our carbon footprint. We've got to, keep our tires inflated.
Yeah, we do. Meanwhile, they don't have to.
Here's my question. I'm going to use a square number. Every year, they pump 1 million gallons of gas, 1 million barrels, just as a number. Say, every year, they pump 1 million barrels of oil out of
the ground. Then they'll run out of that so they can logically
Here's my point. If they pump 1 million barrels of oil out of the ground, they're going to burn all 1 million, right?
Correct.
I don't care how my tires are inflated. I don't care what I do. If they pump 1 million barrels, they're burning 1 million barrels. Here's my point. The guy who's flying in a private jet, who's going to burn more gas in one flight than I would burn in 5 years with my car, tells me that I got to drive a few less miles to save the planet. But
yeah, it's called hypocrisy.
The only way that you can burn less oil is to leave it in the ground.
To leave it in the ground in the first
You know
place.
How the only way you could cut the carbon in half is to only pump half as much oil out of the ground. Because as much as they pump out of the ground, they're going to burn. So what do they say?
You've got to do this.
Right. And then when you say, what's happening with gas? What's Joe Biden say? We got to pump more oil. Doesn't he?
Correct.
We got to pump more. We need more oil. We need prices down. So they're pumping more oil, which means they're going to burn more oil. And then they're going to tell you that you got to do something to reduce your carbon footprint, which will have no effect whatsoever on anything because they will not reduce the amount of oil that they're pumping out of the ground. Logically speaking, does that make sense?
And that's what you alluded to earlier when you said precipitated, very key word. Our energy dependency has been precipitated historically, not just nuclear, obviously oil, but how about Europe and the G9, G11 summit, Climate Accords? How's their agriculture looking right now? And then coincidentally, we're just at war with Ukraine.
Let me get jumping off. I got one more caller.
Your viewers, the real life lore, and just have a think. If they're bored with Garland, you don't want to disagree with you, maybe they can listen to some other YouTubers out there.
All right, thank you. All right. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from? I'm hearing my voice in the background. You there, caller?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Go for it.
Hey, I just noticed you're still splitting time between the other radio station and this radio station. I had a quick question. I know after October 7th, you've been kind of supporting Palestine against the
No. Long before October 7th, I've been supporting Palestine for as long as I can remember, but go ahead.
Okay, yeah, since they were called like the Philistines, I guess, right?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, whatever. But why don't you support the Ukrainians then? I mean, they're both underdogs.
What Ukrainians? I don't recognize Ukrainian as a country. The United States overthrew the government of Ukraine and put in a government for Ukraine. Who is there for me to support?
Just the underdog, you know?
The United States government is not an underdog. If the United States hadn't overthrown the government of Ukraine, we wouldn't have a war. So I know the United States shouldn't have overthrown the government of Ukraine. How can the United States overthrow the government and then claim that it's an independent and sovereign nation that we should stand up for? I'll put it to you like this. If Russia and China overthrew the government of Mexico and started building bases and Garland Nixon was the president, I'd attack them. Wouldn't you? Would you let China and Mexico start building bases and put, I mean, China and Russia start building bases and put them in Mexico? If you're the president of the United States, I wouldn't. So I can understand that no superpower is going to let another superpower overthrow the government of a country on their border. That's going to be war every single time, my friend.
Yeah, but how many Russian hostages does Ukraine have?
But there ain't no such country as Ukraine. That's what I'm saying. The government was overthrown by the United States. It is nothing but a U.S. colony.
You mean Muscovy? You're saying Russia, like Ukraine and Muscovy, you know, the Moscovite?
I don't know what you mean by Muscovy. I'm just simply saying the U.S. overthrew the government of Ukraine. That's all I'm saying.
He did the interview. There's two Russias. There's Ukraine and then there's Moscow.
I don't know what you're talking about. It's about two Russias, my friend.
That's what he said in the interview. He said in the interview the reason he's in there is because there's supposed to be one Russia, but right now there's two Russias.
Well, all I know is this. There's supposed to be one Ukraine, and the United States government ain't supposed to overthrow it. That's all I'm saying. Let me ask you this. Do you deny that the United States government overthrew the government of Ukraine in 2014? Are you saying that didn't happen?
I mean, did we influence it? Sure.
I said overthrew it.
No, of course not. You can't overthrow another country.
We can't overthrow another country?
No, but
the United States is not overthrowing other countries?
People have to participate.
The United States is not overthrowing the government of other countries. For instance, we never overthrew the government of Guatemala or Argentina. How about Nicaragua? How about Bolivia? Did we overthrow the government of Guyana? Have we overthrown the government? Of Haiti? Have we overthrown the government of Iraq? Have we overthrown the government of Syria? But we don't overthrow governments. We overthrew the government of Australia in 1975. The guy was named Gough Whitlam. Look it up. There was a documentary made about it. If the United States overthrew the government of Australia, now you think they wouldn't overthrow the government of Ukraine or anybody, I guess, right?
No, I mean, there's winners and losers in every conflict.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks a lot.
All right.
I certainly appreciate the call. Call me next week. I really appreciate your call. Very interesting call. Winners and losers. At any rate, thanks a lot, everybody. Robin Holden is going to be next with some fantastic music. I want to thank my main man, Kalia. He does a fantastic job keeping the music on. And you can find me online, Garland N, GARLAND, and the letter N, GarlandN@gmail.com. I also got a YouTube show. I'm also on Facebook. Thanks a lot. Keep your radio tuned for Robin Holden. You know I love African house music. You know I love my African music. Master KG, get me out of here.
Oh, I need to.